work on this.
All right, let's get started plug. Here. Good morning. It's Wednesday, January 16th, 2008. It's 10 o'clock a.m. here in the Commission Hearing Room, State Capitol, 12th floor. The Commission is meeting for its regularly scheduled meeting. I'm Commissioner Susan Wiefald, and with me today are Commissioners Tony Clark and Kevin Kramer. I'll first go to my fellow commissioners and see if they have any welcoming comments.
Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Welcome.
I move passage of items in the consent agenda.
Second.
Aye. SW1, I move the commission close out contract number AM54207 with Theme Drilling, Inc. for completion of construction services at the Williams County Road 9 Phase 2 abandoned mine land site.
Second.
Now, on May 2nd of 2007, the commission entered into a contract with Theme Drilling. The contract was for drilling and injecting a pressurized grout mixture into abandoned underground mine workings and related services. The contracted amount was $639,150, and the work was completed for a total cost of $637,612. And therefore, it looks appropriate that the contract be closed.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. SW2, I move the commission award a contract to the Burke County Soil Conservation District for tree and shrub planting at the Columbus Phase 8 abandoned mine land site in Burke County.
Second.
And at the request of Mark Nell, the Burke County Soil Conservation District submitted a proposal for tree and shrub plantings at the Columbus Phase 8 abandoned mine land site. This is the same site or adjacent to a site we're going to be doing working in this next year, too. The proposal is for planting 47 rows of trees and shrubs with a combined length of 23,658 feet on graded spoil. And the cost of planting, including tree and shrub costs and installation of fabric weed barrier, is going to be $16,560. We don't need to do, we can enter into contracts with another government agency without using a competitive bidding process. So everything seems to be in order for this.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. SW3, I move the commission adopt the order approving a service area agreement establishing locations for new electric service to be served by Montana Dakota Utilities and Capital Electric Cooperative within and around the city of Bismarck, North Dakota, case number PU07754.
Yes.
Now, this is the first time that the commission is using North Dakota Century Code section 490306, which allows the commission to approve a service area agreement establishing locations for new electric service for electric service to be served by companies. When we vote on this, it would effectively close several cases before the commission. It will effectively close the case before us regarding Promontory Point 3rd and 4th additions to the city of Bismarck, the Sonnet Heights addition to the city of Bismarck, and, of course, we have already decided the case on Boulder Ridge 1st addition to the city of Bismarck. As it says in the agreement that's being approved today by the commission in Section 14, notwithstanding the generality of other provisions of this agreement, it is specifically agreed that Montana Dakota will not continue to serve any service locations in Boulder Ridge 1st addition to the city of Bismarck, Promontory Point 3rd and 4th additions to the city of Bismarck, or Sonnet Heights addition to the city of Bismarck. This particular area service agreement is in effect until 2027, and that's reflected in Section 21 of the agreement. The agreement shall become effective on the first day of the month following approval by the North Dakota Public Service Commission. First day of the month following, so I'm assuming that that means that it will become effective February 1st, but we'll just go by what it says in the agreement. The first day of the month following approval by the North Dakota Public Service Commission and the Bismarck Board of City Commissioners and shall continue in effect through December 31st of 2027. This agreement shall remain in force after December 31st, 2027 until canceled by either party by giving 12 months written notice after December 31st, 2026 or such cancellation to other party and to the North Dakota Public Service Commission and the City of Bismarck. I am very happy that MDU and Capital Electric Cooperative have secured this agreement. I would like to congratulate them on working together, actually, and on securing this agreement. The commission looked at several factors. The applicants contend that this agreement will avoid misunderstanding and disagreement over areas to be served by each party. It will accomplish the legislative intent of North Dakota Century Code Section 490306, which encourages harmony and operational efficiency among electric providers, promoting safety, discouraging unreasonable duplication of electric facilities, assuring adequate and reliable electric service, and providing antitrust immunity to the electric providers. And the applicants also contend it will provide both parties with equitable participation in the provision of electric distribution service within undeveloped areas annexed to the city of Bismarck during the terms of the agreement. And so the commission is saying now, in our order, having considered this matter, the commission finds that the service area agreement complies with North Dakota Century Code 490306 and is compatible with public interest and should be approved. Therefore, the commission issues the following. The commission orders that the electric service agreement filed jointly by Montana Dakota and Capital Electric is approved.
I did, when this came before us, want to take a good hard look at it because, at least from my own perspective, I don't think it's enough to just simply say, well, two companies have resolved their differences and it makes life easier for them and it makes life easier for regulators and the courts maybe, so it's in the public interest because, in fact, it might not necessarily be the case. I mean, when you think about two monopoly providers talking to each other, I think all of us could construct scenarios in our head where perhaps it's in each of their own best interests, but it may not be in the best interests of the electricity ratepayers. And I think that's really what the job of this commission is to do, is to watch out for ratepayers of all the utility companies as they enter into these agreements. And in this particular case, I think they've met the burden of public interest that is put out before us to look out for in the law. There will admittedly be some checkerboarding that still happens within the city of Bismarck. You'll have some areas maybe where if they were compact geographic blocks, you wouldn't have otherwise. But what overrides that really is the operational efficiencies that can be gained by a service territory agreement like this. It's the ability to plan and know exactly where you are going to be planning for, the geographic area that you're going to have to build and be responsible for as a utility company. The fact that you're not going to be spending money on litigation and regulatory proceedings. So taken in whole, I think it is a good deal for ratepayers. Taken in whole, I think it does decrease the opportunities for unreasonable duplication of service, of wasteful service, and that's why I'll be supporting the motion.
Well, I'll be supporting it as well, and I too want to congratulate the companies for working together. And just as sure as it is oftentimes our job to reconcile the differences between two competing utilities, it is also our job to reconcile sometimes the differences between seemingly competing laws. And Commissioner Clark has articulated well that it is not always our mission to just go along with an agreement because it creates harmony and avoids misunderstanding. But also that it is in the end the ratepayer that we have to look out for. So I agree that this does meet that burden of public interest, and I look forward to many more such agreements in the future.
I want to let people know that I personally was not contacted about anyone with concerns, and we asked at the public hearing about this whether the companies had received a lot of calls about public concerns. They had not, and I don't believe that the commission received any calls regarding this, regarding public concerns.
And that's a good point, Commissioner, and I'm glad you asked the question at the time and raised the point because, it is sometimes you wonder how much weight do you give to that, and I think a fair amount because I think that the uncertainty is the enemy of progress in many cases, and certainty is the friend of development. And I think when you look at the development that's going on around Bismarck, and you talk to developers, they aren't so concerned about which entity has it as much as that somebody has, you know, the responsibility. And so I think there's a great deal of relief, quite honestly, among ratepayers and customers and even developers that this is being settled in a friendly and harmonious manner. Good point.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. SW4. So now the commission not only has one area service agreement before it today, but it has two. And so this is the second one that the commission will be acting on. I move the commission adopt the order approving a service area agreement establishing locations for new electric service to be served by Otter Tail Corporation and Cass County Electric Cooperative, Inc., within and in areas adjacent to the city of Kindred, North Dakota, case number PU07757.
Second.
Now, I don't think that it probably... was because Commissioner Kramer's parents live in Kindred that this is the first area service agreement that we have in the Cass County Otter Tail area. But that was certainly brought up at the hearing that he does have a parent who could be affected by this. This particular area service agreement continues in effect until December 31st of 2031, and that's in Section 2.2 of the agreement. This agreement may be terminated at any time by the mutual agreement of the parties. Otherwise, this agreement shall continue in effect through December 31st of 2031. And thereafter, this agreement shall automatically renew for successive five-year terms unless either party provides written notice to the other party of its intention to terminate this agreement at least 180 days prior to the end of any such term. The agreement is, just like the other one that we passed, is subject to the continuing jurisdiction of the Public Service Commission, and that's contained in Section 6.9. This agreement is subject to the continuing jurisdiction of the North Dakota Public Service Commission to settle all service location disputes between the contracting electric providers arising under the agreement. So that tells me that although they think they've solved all the problems, they know that in the next number of years until 2031, questions could arise. And so they have said in both agreements that they're subject to the continuing jurisdiction of the North Dakota Public Service Commission to settle any service location disputes between the contracting electric providers. Again, the commission received no comments from the public that I'm aware of on this particular item. There were some questions raised in the with Cass County Electric Cooperative and Otter Tail people just wondering who would be providing them with service if this was approved. And the record seems to be complete, and I recommend approval. And I'd also like to say that I'm also happy that Otter Tail and Cass Electric were able to work out this agreement, and I congratulate the parties on coming together.
I did disclose that I'm from Kindred. My parents still live in Kindred, but I think further it was important to disclose that my parents in December moved into a new home built in a new development that my brother is developing that is part of the newly annexed area of Kindred, which will continue to be served by Otter Tail. But I was relieved to find out when Scott Handy from Cass County Electric said that he did have one customer in a new part of Kindred request that they be served by Cass County Electric, that it was not my father who made the request. Because not only do my parents live there and did they recently move into a newly annexed part of Kindred, but my dad, of course, was a lineman for Cass County Electric for many years. So all of that being duly disclosed, I'm glad that my parents never talked to me about this topic. Because they probably haven't followed it all that closely, quite honestly.
But if you do need to recuse yourself, I'll be voting for it, too.
Okay, so we'll have a majority. I did second the motion.
And again, we looked at whether this was compatible with the public interest. The commission found that it is. As Commissioner Clark said, that's one of the amazing things that the commission looked at in both these cases.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 All right, SW5. I move the commission issue a notice of public input session and intervention deadline in Northern State Power Company's electric rate increase application, case number PU07776.
Second.
The public input session will be held by interactive television on March 14th, 2008 at 11:30 a.m. Central Time at the location set forth below. Those will be Bismarck, Grand Forks, Fargo, and Minot. We're holding them this time in the Grand Forks NDSU Extension Service, their county office building. The Fargo, we're holding them at the NDSU Extension Service in their Cass County Annex, and in Minot at the Minot High School Magic City Campus. We're trying to find locations that are accessible to the public because we know there could be quite a bit of interest in this case. Anyone wishing to become a party to this proceeding must file a petition to intervene by March 28th of 2008. We set that date after the public input session because many times we find that people want to come and find out more about the case, and then they have an opportunity at that point to determine whether they wish to intervene. So that is the reason that date is set 2 weeks after the public input session. We would have liked to have had the public input sessions even earlier in the case framework. However, notices need to go out, and that is an important way of communicating with people. The notices need to be sent out by the company in their billing, and their billing schedule meant that even if the commission got that information to them very early in January, that the billing notices wouldn't go out until February. And so we wanted to have this time for the public input session in March to give people plenty of opportunity to read those and be able to attend.
All in favor?
Aye.
SW6, these are our fuel cost adjustments. For NSP, NSP's total average cost of fuel and purchased energy for the month of January will be 2.685 cents per kilowatt hour. And as a result of the changes from last month, the electric bill for a typical NSP residential customer consuming 750 kilowatt hours will decrease by 62 cents for rendered in the month of January. Otter Tail's total average cost of fuel and purchased energy for billing during the month of January will go to 3.08 cents. This is a significant change for Otter Tail customers. As a result of this change, the electric bill for a typical Otter Tail residential customer consuming 750 kilowatt hour per month will increase by $8.78 for bills rendered in the month of January. The reason for this is because they had seasonal purchases of off-system energy because Otter Tail is a winter peaking system. And also, they had purchases of replacement energy, which I would say would be the main issue here, to offset the loss of Otter Tail's Big Stone plant, which was down for extended maintenance during November and December of 2007. So you can see that the cost of Otter Tail's fuel and purchased power is not as high as it was last summer, but it certainly made a significant increase from the last 2 months. And then we get to MDU. And MDU, their total average cost of fuel and purchased energy for billing during January is 2.202 cents. And as a result of this change, for the typical MDU residential customer consuming 750 kilowatt hours per month will decrease by $1.04 for bills rendered in the month of January. That ends the items in my agenda, except that I am now going to discuss for a few minutes a issue that I am very committed to, and that is challenging North Dakotans to use compact fluorescent light bulbs. And I'm challenging all North Dakota households to replace one or more incandescent light bulbs with compact fluorescent bulbs, which use up to 75% less energy than the old bulbs, and they can last up to 10 times longer. According to an Energy Star report, a joint program of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and the U.S. Department of Energy, North Dakotans can save $1 million annually if every household replaces just one incandescent bulb with a compact fluorescent bulb. I think it's amazing how much energy and money can be saved by simply changing a light bulb, and I would encourage everyone to take this small step toward energy conservation. I've already replaced 3 light bulbs, and I prefer the soft white color bulbs because they provide light very similar in color to the light from incandescent bulbs. I must admit that I bought my first light bulb was a daylight color light bulb for the compact fluorescents, and I didn't like the color of it. It was very bright and blue. Some people tell me they like that color better because it helps them read better. However, once I changed and found that I could get soft white light bulbs, I found that I really liked the color that they provided and found that it wasn't a lot different from my incandescent bulbs. These bulbs are readily available today. When I've been out looking at pricing for them, as I found that you can pay up to $5 for one light bulb, 100-watt bulb, which will last up. This one says lasts up to 7 years guaranteed. I found some, though, you can get three for $10 for a 100-watt bulb, so they do vary in price depending on who's manufacturing them and such. I find that the same companies, and, of course, some new companies who are providing incandescent bulbs are also providing now the new compact fluorescents. I'd like to give a little demonstration because I've heard that people say that there can be a significant delay in turning on your light when you use a compact fluorescent. Okay, there was a tiny delay of maybe a second, but to me that is worth the delay to have your energy bills decrease and the fact that you are using 75% less electricity when you turn on this light.
So when's the last time you turned that on?
Half an hour ago.
Well, that's cheating. You should have left it off for at least 8 hours. Then there would have been more of a delay.
Taking 2 seconds.
Anyway, I have provided additional information about the light bulbs, and I just think they're great. I'm replacing them in my home, and this can make a significant difference in energy usage across our country and in our state. And the main reason I think people would want to do this is because most of the utilities in North Dakota are projecting needing additional power in the future. Every megawatt of electricity that your electric company does not need to build helps keep your electric rates lower. Okay. Moving on, unless there's any further comments by my fellow commissioners, we'll go to...
I think we should all replace iceberg lettuce with spinach leaves. It's far more nutritious. But anyway, no, that's my...
I've done that.
If we can get Congress to mandate it in the next
year,
we
could do that.
Well, Congress has not mandated that. They have said energy efficiency standard for general service incandescent lamps, increasing efficiency standards by 30%. So it is true that there are new standards for incandescent bulbs, and if they can't meet them, they will need to be phased out by 2012 to 2014.
They banned by definition, just not by name. Yeah.
However, I think there are good new products out on the market, and we're certainly not. I feel very comfortable in promoting this because I'm not endorsing a specific brand. I'm endorsing a specific type of new product which can help people significantly reduce the energy use in this state and in our country. Okay, now going on to Kevin.
KC1 has been withdrawn, so I'll go to KC2. I move the commission acknowledge the letter of intent, shorten the one-year waiting period between filing a letter of intent and a siting application to 1 day, and assess a filing fee of $100,000 due upon filing of an application in case number PU07791, Enbridge Pipelines, North Dakota LLC's proposed liquid petroleum pipeline system upgrades.
Second.
This has come to be known as Phase 6 of the Enbridge North Dakota expansions. Phase 5, interestingly, we received our last weekly construction report of Phase 5 on December 19th, and right at the same day we received letter of intent. Or notice the letter of intent was filed December 19th for Phase 6. The Phase 6 expansion includes the expansion of the upgrades of a number of pumping stations along the Enbridge, North Dakota pipeline project. It is anticipated that will increase the capacity of that pipeline from 110,000 barrels per day to 161,000 800 barrels per day, so that's a considerable increase. Actually, Phase 5 increased the capacity of that pipeline by about 30 to 45,000 barrels per day, depending on how warm the temperature is on any given day. So this goes a long way to further relieving that bottleneck that has created some apportionment problems and certainly some discounting of oil prices in western North Dakota. I did this cost estimate of this phase is about $119.7 million. I went back and quickly looked at Enbridge's investments in North Dakota in the last 3 years. This brings their total investment in upgrades in the North Dakota system to about $275 million. That's since 2005. So, like I said, we received the letter of intent. They anticipate having a application filed any day now, I would expect, perhaps even this week, and construction beginning May of this year, so, and then being operational by December of this year. So everything seems to be in order.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. KC3 is simply for discussion purposes. There are some cost of gas adjustment, or purchase gas adjustments. NSP is decreasing the cost of gas by 22.59 cents per decatherm being applied to natural gas customers. For January, it changes the residential customer cost of gas from 8.45 per decatherm to 8.22.9 cents per decatherm, and the cost of gas in the bill then will be about $3.66 higher this month than last month and about $1.23 higher than January of last year. Obviously, the volume charge is down, but obviously there's more volume used in January, which is what creates those numbers. Great Plains is decreasing its cost of gas charge to residential customers by 59.25 cents per 1,000 cubic feet compared to last month. The cost of gas in the bill will change from 1027 per MCF to 968 per MCF for a typical residential customer. In January, the cost of gas in the bill will be about $11.91 lower than last month and about $32.14 higher than January of last year. That ends the items in my portfolio.
Commissioner Clark.
Just one item in my portfolio. That's TC1. I move the commission issue an order in case number GE0812, suspending roving grain buyer license number 3068 of Dakota Farms International Limited, doing business as DFI Limited, Carpenter, South Dakota, effective January 3rd, 2008, for lack of an adequate bond filing.
Second.
On November 2nd, the commission was notified that the roving grain buyer bond issued to Dakota Farms International Limited, DBA DFI Limited, to Carpenter, South Dakota, of Carpenter, South Dakota, is being canceled on January 31st. State law provides that unless the licensee files a new bond at least 30 days before liability ceases, the commission, without hearing, shall immediately suspend the roving grain buyer's license. DFI had until January 2nd to file a replacement bond. No replacement bond has been filed.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Should note the license will be automatically revoked if the licensee does not file a new bond by January 31st. Mm-hmm. That ends the items in my portfolio.
And that ends items before the commission. Are there any questions?
The pump upgrades on the Enbridge pipeline, how many pumps are there going to be?
There are fair number of them, actually. They're in eight counties. It's at Alexander, Beaver Lodge, Stanley, Minot, Denby, Pleasant Lake, Penn, Bartlett, and Larimore Station. So it's a total of nine pumps.
And can you tell me anything about them? I mean, are they higher horsepower or what?
Yes.
That's generally what they are, higher horsepower, able to pump more, obviously more volume through the existing pipe. And you'll remember back to Phase 5, or maybe you won't, but that was similar, although there were also some pipe upgrades. There were some a lot of testing on the pipe to make sure that it was capable of taking these increases. But, for example, at Blaisdell Station in Montreal County, they're installing a new 3,000-horsepower single-pump motor and a 3,500 HPVFD, and all the controls that go along with it. In Minot, it's a 2,000-horsepower pump motor. Denby, a 2,500-horsepower motor. And so on. So that's basically what it is, just more horsepower.
Do you know how old the existing pumps are?
I don't know these particular ones. Obviously, when we have a hearing, we'll probably get some of that information. This particular pipeline, however, has been there since about 1960. It was pre-siting laws in North Dakota. So we're always mindful of that as we look at our jurisdiction and the siting of any upgrades to a previously unsited pipeline.
Do you have any idea how much more tax revenue the counties are going to get?
You know, I don't have that at this point as part of the letter of intent.
How much horsepower are the existing pumps?
You know, I don't know that offhand, Janelle, and that is not anywhere in the letter of intent at this point.
You mentioned a hearing, and you know when that's going to be?
We don't yet. No, because we haven't received the application.
This is just acknowledging
the letter of intent. And, of course, shortening, as you've become familiar with, that one-year waiting period and making it possible for them to file now their permit application.
I wanted to ask about the electric utility agreements. I mean, this was addressed a little bit, but is it worth trading the convenience of utilities and the convenience of regulators with, I mean, there may be customers out there who don't want MDU or don't want Capital Electric or don't want Otter Tail, they want the other one. And doesn't this take that choice away from them?
Actually, they didn't have a choice before.
Dale,
they did not have a choice. They were always assigned to an electric provider. And so we do not have retail choice in the state of North Dakota. People are not able to choose, do they want Capital Electric or MDU? Now, if they have a choice, they'll know who is going to provide each area of both Bismarck and in Kindred, and they can then put their business in that location or put their home in that location if they have a strong desire for a certain electric provider.
And Dale, I think your question is exactly the right one when we study the public interest standard, because in and of itself, it is not a goal that I aspire to, that we simply trade the convenience of two utility companies and then sell down the river ratepayers in the process. I mean, that's why we have this public interest standard. And what I took into consideration, I think what the commission as a whole took into consideration, is in striking this deal that the two utility companies have, separate from that, is it still in the public interest? In other words, by coming together, by signing this agreement, okay, maybe they have some convenience for themselves, but is it still the best deal for ratepayers? It's kind of like Howie Mandel, the deal or no deal. But the real question is, did you make a good deal? And for the ratepayers, I believe that that is the case here. And the reason is because as these two utilities now build out their networks, they're able to do so with a certainty in how they design their networks that they didn't have before. They're able to know that there aren't going to be certain costs incurred to, you know, build out to areas to kind of work the TIA Act. I mean, that's honestly been one of the bigger concerns that I've had about the TIA as it currently exists, is because it doesn't set firm boundaries, because it's all based on kind of who got there first and who has infrastructure in the area. There's a built-in sort of incentive within that act to go out and perhaps build to some areas betting that development will get there, because then you'll get the load if it does. That causes costs to ratepayers of both utility companies. When you have some certainty about who's going to serve where, then it takes some of those questions off the table. And what it does is it allows, instead of lawyers designing your electric grid, it allows engineers to build a grid the way that they think is the best, most reliable, and economical way to serve that area.
What do you have against lawyers?
Nothing.
So is it fair to say that...
I just don't want them designing my utility grid. Okay. That's all.
Doing your surgery.
Is it fair to say that Cass County and Otter Tail have become kindred spirits?
Ooh.
I wish I'd have thought of that.
What was the impetus for the Cass County Otter Tail agreement?
They have been working on this, they said, for quite a while. They anticipate having additional area service agreements. They said that this one just came to the forefront first, didn't give us any reason of why Kindred was first.
I mean, were they arguing about who could serve this?
We don't know.
You know, I don't think they were. I don't know, Dale. That's a good question.
No,
I mean, I suspect, though, that I shouldn't suspect anything. That's not what we should do. But it's a nice little community to set an example in.
I mean, how many more of these do you anticipate in the near future?
I don't.
You don't?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Are there any that you're aware of that
in the works?
Excel was here watching this, sat in on the hearing, and they indicated that they may have an area service agreement to bring before the commission at some point as well.
I mean, will they have one with Fargo or West Fargo, do you think?
I don't know. We'll just wait and see.
You mentioned that this is the first use of such and such a law.
Yes.
And if I remember right, this is a law passed in 05 or 07?
05.
That said these companies can work together on some agreement without risking the...
antitrust.
Risking the charge of
collusion.
Antitrust. Mm-hmm.
Carving up customers for their own benefit.
Actually, we can find that exact language. I have it in my on my desk.
Does this obviate the need to change the Territorial Integrity Act?
No. I think that... Does this obviate the need to change it?
You do not have to change the Territorial Integrity Act because you have this...
I'm not going to comment on that.
You know, I think that's a political calculation that legislators need to make. There are obviously political pressures that are brought forth every so often, one way or another, to change it or to not change it. Now, whether striking some of these changes that political calculus, I don't know.
But. Should customers go and change bulbs that haven't been burned out?
Personally, I'm replacing bulbs that have burned out at home.
Is this an urgent enough matter that people should go and take their incandescent bulbs out, even if they're functional, and replace them with these?
People can do what they wish. I'm just encouraging people, as they replace their bulbs, to use compact fluorescents.
Okay, so you're not encouraging them to take out a working bulb and replace it with a cool new
No, I'm not.
Fluorescent bulb. Okay.
I'm replacing mine at home as they need to be replaced.
When did you start doing this?
I started doing this in the fall.
I mean, you remember when you first put in your first CFL bulb?
Yes, I would say it was in October or November. Now, they have been on the market for quite some time. And so it took me a while to, quote, warm up to these compact fluorescents.
Takes them a while to warm up,
right?
Too.
However, I think people need a little bit of encouragement. This is a new product that they see in the stores, and that's why I think people need some encouragement to give it a try. But the fact that it can save 75% of the energy that is used by a normal incandescent bulb, I think, is just a great attribute of these compact fluorescents.
You think they need not only encouragement, but maybe a small loan to?
No, I don't. because over the life of the bulb, you actually save money.
Although it depends on a number of factors. I mean, part of it is the cost of electricity. Part of it is where you use them, too. As I understand, there are certain applications you don't want to use them for. For example, an unheated garage is not the best use of a CFL light bulb because those cold and hot temperature swings can decrease their useful life. And the important thing to remember is you only recover the cost, assuming that it stays in place for a long time. I know I had one, and I've got a number in my house, but I had one burn out relatively new into the useful life of it. Now, I don't keep receipts for light bulbs, so I wasn't able to cash in on the guarantee, I guess. But, there are applications where they're maybe not particularly optimal. One of them is, for example, areas where you flip lights on and off very quickly. In order to have a long, useful life on these, they need to be run for a while, which is kind of ironic given that it's
I don't think that's
power.
Correct.
No, that...
Well, that's pretty...
I'm afraid it is correct.
That's correct, yeah. That's
it's
correct.
Absolutely correct, yeah. Which is why, I mean, so
well,
in
most
closets
people, when
and
they
like
turn
that,
on, most people, when they turn on a light, you're leaving it on for probably a long period of time. Let's say 15, 30 minutes. You're going to be sitting next to that light reading or something. Or you're leaving a light on to light your room, all right, when you're in that room. I mean, the times when you're turning, I agree, in a closet where you're going to be going in and out of a closet, but how many of us go back and forth to a closet and turn it on and off, on and off, on and off,
I've got a 4-year-old. You'd be shocked. Lights get flipped on and off.
I mean, is it appropriate for a state official to be promoting the use of a product?
I think it's okay because it is not a brand name product. It is just a new technology that's out there on the market, and I think it's perfectly appropriate.
There has been an interesting debate going on across the country about the CFL bulbs and if and how they save money. One of the there was a very just kind of a fascinating article, I think it was in the Wall Street Journal here within about the last week, on CFLs and California, because in California they've heavily subsidized CFL bulbs. What they've done is they've taken they've encouraged utility companies to take regulated dollars and then subsidize CFL bulbs so that their upfront costs are cheaper. And generally it's been applauded by environmentalists, but there's some concern growing now that it may not be the best bang for ratepayer dollars. And the reason is, and some of this has to do with California's load profile, it would depend in different parts of the country exactly how this works out. But, of course, the need for new power plants is always based on the peak, right? You build for the highest need day or the highest need time. And so what you look to do to not bring new power plants online is to reduce the peak. Well, lighting tends to often not coincide with the peak, because when do you use lights? You use them at night, by definition. And so they're finding in California that it's not quite shaving the peak as they thought they would, and they're wondering if not it would make more sense to put money into encouraging efficiency into those appliances that run during the real high peak times. So would it be better to spend that money on, for example, very high efficient air conditioning units for large industrial buildings? It's an interesting debate. It's fun to watch.
I've read a lot on it, and you might, and I do think that the jury's still out, and I think technology, as always, will perfect a lot of these flaws that might exist. I actually had quite a conversation a week and a half or so ago with some of you might know Kurt Kesserling, who was the founder of Maintenance Engineering in Fargo, which is the largest industrial lighting company in the country. And I asked him about the mandate, the congressional mandate. And of course, like he said, I can sell one just as well as the other. And so, you know, from a market standpoint, it certainly seems heavy-handed that Congress would come in and mandate one product over another, one legitimate product over another legitimate product. And what it demonstrates really is that their lack of trust in people to make their own decisions based on their own circumstances and for manufacturers to respond to that market.
They have put out mandates for years on, let's say, improving the efficiency of all sorts of appliances, including washing machines and refrigerators, and those have dramatically improved the energy efficiency of those appliances in our country.
What
they've just said, we want to improve the efficiency of lighting as well, which people use so much across our country. So this is not a step that's a lot different from what Congress has done to improve energy efficiency in many, many other ways.
No question about it.
And I think it's timely that the lighting industry has been identified
and they'll continue to intrude on our freedoms and our decisions. I mean, that's what they do.
But that's just a different
philosophy. I understand that. That's my point.
There's no shortage of people in Washington who think that they know how to run your life better than you do.
Yeah, I mean, ask Major League Baseball.
I want to back you up to the NSP cost of gas change.
That's not as much fun as CS.
it was $8.45 a decatherm.
Oh, you're talking about
cost of gas.
Natural gas, yeah. Let me get that exactly for you. Okay. NSP is decreasing the cost of gas by 20. Here's what you want to know what it was. It was $8.45.49 per decatherm, and is now $8.22.9 per decatherm. That translates then to
a dollar figure attached to that for the average customer.
Right. The average customer in January, this is based on a typical residential consumption of 16.2 decatherms, okay? the cost of gas in the bill will be about $3.66 higher than last month. Oh, lower than last month. Okay. So the January use is roughly the same as the at any rate, so lower than last month, then $1.20, but still $1.23 higher than January of last year. So
gets pretty close. Do you have any idea on the Barnes County Wind Project when there'll be some kind of hearing, siting decision, that kind of thing?
Well, actually, the commission has received a letter of intent, and the commission first needs to recognize that letter of intent and determine whether it wants to approve the waiver that's been requested. And so that will probably be on the next meeting of the commission. And then we have not yet received the application. In the letter that they sent to us, they anticipated that they would file that around February the 5th. And so at that time, then at a meeting following when we receive that application, then the commission would be setting hearing dates.
I can tell you, that, as I recall the letter of intent, they're hoping for a May decision and begin construction, of course, this summer to have it completed and operational by the end of the year. And although that's become somewhat of a tradition around here, once again, we have to remind everybody that our staff has a lot on its plate, and these waivers are no longer automatic. As much as we want to accommodate this sort of development, it's getting harder and harder to do that.
Are you expecting more of these given the potential demise of the tax credits?
The last time, when previous to this current time, of course, the production tax credits were on like one-year life support all the time. Every year it was a one-year renewal, and so it was constant urgency. And we had a little bit of a break this time because it was a multi-year, must have been two-year. So we had a little break. Well, guess what? We're back now to, 11 months. So I guess I would not be surprised, Dale, to see a lot of that unless Congress quickly acts and at least sends some signals that the production tax credit will be continued.
What do you think of the size of this project?
It's would be the largest project in the state.
It's interesting, though, I was looking at the
200 megawatts.
200 megawatts. The Langdon one was 159, and then we have a letter of intent for them to upgrade that one 40 more. So that would bring them to 199. So it gets pretty close. It would beat it by 1 megawatt. So,
is this intended for to compete for the XL business, do you think?
I don't think so, but I'm not the expert. I think
that
I doubt
it.
That
is not what I've heard.
We don't know who's going to buy the power yet.
We've only heard rumors.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. And we don't spread rumors around here.
What rumors have you heard?
No, we don't do that. I'm not doing that.
Yeah. So. Kindred Public Power?
That's it. No, I think it's the Fargo Public Schools. Not
okay,
true. That is not
further,
true.
Are there any further questions? All right. Thank you. And the commission will adjourn until 11 o'clock, and then we'll hold our admin portion of the meeting. Thanks for your interest.
By the way,